This is Kids These Days.
Today on the program, we're talking about the part-time single parent. In Alaska, there are many jobs that make for the part-time single parent situation. Sometimes mom works 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off on the North Slope. Sometimes dad is a commercial airline pilot. Sometimes dad heads out for the summer on a commercial fishing boat. And sometimes mom serves in the military overseas for months on end. In each case, one parent is left at home to do it all, some of the time. Today in the studio, I talk with parents who find adaptive ways to make family life work this way. Also, we hear from parents in Juneau whose families stay behind when they head down for the legislative session. And we have a report on the resources the military makes available to family members of deployed servicemen and women. All that this hour on Kids These Days. Hi, I'm Shanna Sheehy, host of Kids These Days. Today's topic is one that I feel like I can relate to at the moment. I was recently a single parent part of the time in our household, and I can tell you I was pretty relieved the day that dad came home. Do you manage a household that regularly has one parent away? Did you grow up in a household like this? If you want to let us know what you think about our conversation today, it's easy to do. Comment right now at kidsthesedays.org. It's easier than ever these days. Or send us a note to mail@kidsthesedays.org. I'm joined today by three people who each have a different experience with part-time single parenting. Brooke Scalzo and her husband John Andrews have three children, a 2-year-old named Josie, a 4-year-old named Nora, and John's 17-year-old son James. Together they own three commercial fishing vessels out of Seward. Brooke was formerly a special needs preschool teacher with the Delta Greeley School District. Brooke's husband fishes each year from May to November for salmon, halibut, and sable fish. And Brooke joins us by phone from Seward today. Hi Brooke, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Also in the studio is Amanda Rothbarth. She and her husband John have two children, ages 3 and 5, and they're expecting their third baby any day now. Amanda's husband works a 2-week-on, 2-week-off slope rotation, a schedule they've kept for the last 5 years. Also, with juggling a busy family life, Amanda works from home as a freelance graphic designer. Thanks so much for being with us today, Amanda.
Thanks.
And also with us, we have CW4 Chief Scott Frickson. He and his wife, Kyla, have an almost 3-year-old daughter named Jada. Scott's flown for the Army and Alaska Army National Guard for 20-plus years. He's been deployed to Thailand, Guatemala, Spain, Korea, and Iraq. He currently is the Battlefield Surveillance Brigade Tactical Operations Officer and is the director for the Alaska Guard Red P Program, that's Rural Education Drug Program for the state of Alaska. While Scott was never deployed after his daughter was born, his work supports deployed soldiers now, and currently he and his wife and child have been apart for 5 months while she runs their newly purchased resort in Wisconsin as he prepares to retire. Thanks so much, Scott, for being with us today.
Thank you.
Well, I'd like to start maybe with you, Brooke, from Seward. Your husband is a commercial fisherman, so his time away from home happens during a season, a fishing season. Can you tell us a little bit about what that means? I mean, is he gone all the time from May to November, or is he kind of popping back in sometimes?
Well, we actually, when we say, typically what happens is we go over to Cordova, where he starts his gillnet season with our smallest boat, and when we get help him get started for the season, and when we head back to Seward, when we get on the ferry, we just kind of say goodbye and plan on seeing him in September, October, and any instance in between is a bonus. That's kind of the way it goes.
Okay, so he's actually fishing out of someplace other than Seward, it sounds like, some of the time?
Yes. When he does any of the salmon fishing, he's away from home. When he does the long lining, he is based out of Seward. So the beginning spring fishing and then end of the season, October, November, is based out of Seward.
So tell us a little bit about your family life that sort of works on this schedule. I mean, you have your own circumstances, but by no means are you the only mom who's at home with kids while dad, or, you know, the flip can be true too, goes out and seasonally fishes. So, you know, tell us a little bit, for those of us who haven't lived that lifestyle, what's it like?
It can be very frustrating. There's definitely times where you wish daddy was there. I have found that it's very important for me to have a very good friend base and support system around Seward to be able to keep us occupied. As our children are growing up, the biggest frustration I've found is having the times when daddy comes back and how crazy our lives become because we want to spend every waking moment with him. And so our schedule when daddy is home becomes no schedule. And we just try to accommodate and spend as much time because he might sneak in to get a boat part and he's here for 24 hours. And we just spend as much time as we can with him and then takes a couple days to recover after he leaves and then get back onto our schedule.
Do you think that those sort of 24-hour windows of opportunity to see and interact with dad, are they hard for dad?
I think that they're hardest for dad. I've kind of progressed as our children are growing up and going through this summer after summer. And, you know, I used to have the poor me attitude, but it's definitely harder on dad because I have little miniature versions of him with me all the time. And him being out on the boat, he doesn't have that at all. So it's definitely tougher on him.
Well, Amanda Rothbarth, let me go next to you. Your husband works on the North Slope, a 2 week on, 2 week off schedule. So, you know, you're kind of in a situation, right, where you're dealing with dad home and the routine half the time and then dad away and the routine half the time. Mm-hmm. You know, help those of us who aren't familiar with that sort of family interaction understand what's happening.
Well, usually he comes home. He has a Thursday rotation. My girls spend more time at the airport than most kids, I think, picking up dad. And usually the first day, they're pretty cling tight. And then we kind of get in a routine, but we always kind of have this running joke about slope dads being these Disney dads who come home and take their kids on vacations and do fun things and screw up schedules and don't do naps. And but as we have gone through the years, I think we've gotten much better about trying to honor some of the routine. But so...
And is there an adjustment period? I've heard that from couples who have this kind of schedule where one of the people is away for half of the time. And I've heard friends of mine say, gosh, there's like a few days that, you know, this transition between having them there and having them away. And I've always wondered if that happens and what that is when there's kids involved, too, because kids are pretty sensitive, especially when they're little, to schedule.
Yeah, and but I also remember that my kids have never known anything else. So this is normal to them. We're pretty good about, you know, we're 5 years into this, so we're pretty good about knowing what it's going to be like. I think it was much harder to adjust when my husband was military and would go on really long deployments, you know, 5-6 months. That's an adjustment. But every 2 weeks, when your kids kind of know what's coming, it's actually kind of worked out well for us.
Well, that's a great time to invite Scott Frickson into the conversation. Now, Scott Frickson, you have been in the military and in the Army Reserve, or on the Guard, is that right?
The Guard.
Excuse me. And before I ask you a little bit about some of your professional take on this issue, right now, as I mentioned in the introduction of you, your family is away. You have a young daughter and your wife, and you're about to relocate to Wisconsin. And for 5 months now, you've been the parent away here in Alaska while they've been establishing themselves and your family in this new place. So personally, being the person who's away, and now your wife is the part-time single parent at the moment. How has that experience, this most recent experience, been for you?
I think it's easier for me as I wrap things up in my career, and she's running a resort that, you know, is brand new for her, and a almost three-year-old. I do miss, because you get to see, you know, your little daughter grow up by, we do use the internet, you know, and some of the video and stuff, and phones. It's not such a huge sacrifice. I mean, we had to do it to set ourselves up for success, but my wife's handling a lot more than I am right now, so...
And you mentioned that, you know, you're sort of living a little bit of a bachelor lifestyle life at the moment. Eating frozen burritos or old burritos and so forth for dinner. Yeah. And you mentioned something, too, that I think is interesting, that you're using some of these modern communication tools to keep better touch. So you're Skyping with your daughter and that kind of thing.
Communication is key. And that's something that sometimes when you're deployed, you don't have an option. And so now it's a lot easier because we do get to Skype. I get to, you know, talk to him on the phone several times a day. So it's much easier that way.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk a little bit about when there are service members who are deployed and their family members are mm-hmm. far away for long stretches of time. I know in Scott Frickson, in your own experience, you've been deployed, but it was before you had a child. Mm-hmm. But you work with deployed soldiers. Mm-hmm. So I'm imagining you're aware of some of the challenges that those families face. Can you maybe describe some of
those? I actually did a staff study in the Warrant Officer Advanced course on this because I think it is a critical issue, especially with soldiers, you know, that commit suicide and those high rates and that issue. Also with the Rural Education Drug Program, where I teach rural students from all over the state and I've done adult education, the commonality is, and this is just my opinion, but we communicate differently these days, especially with younger people. And the soldiers that I saw that really struggled in Iraq, a perfect example is a young soldier that worked with a striker brigade. He was engaged, and we had these little telephone setups where you got 10 minutes apiece. That was it. And his fiance was struggling because she felt like he abandoned her, because when they were in the States, they texted constantly. Instantaneous communication. They could call, you know, 10, 15, 20 times a day. When that poor guy was out, you know, busting down doors and doing his job, 2 weeks at a time, he had no resources to communicate whatsoever. And then at that point where he's going through, I mean, the contractor person tapped on the shoulder and said, you know, your time is up. I got upset and said, let him have my time, because that was critical in his life. And it ended up that his fiance did, you know, break off their engagement. And it was traumatic for them because they didn't have those skill sets. And I've some of the rural kids that depart the, you know, their rural communities and come into Anchorage for 4 months to be engaged in what's called the Voyage to Excellence program that I get to teach at. They struggle because, again, they're in an environment they're not comfortable with, and communication is different. And so that's part of the life skills training that I give not only youth but adults, to mm-hmm. let them understand, hey, our culture has changed the way we communicate. And when you're separated, that compounds that problem.
And do you also have experience with how, like, the difficulty with communication, the length of deployment, you know, how are those families who stay behind? Like, are there issues with the families who stay behind? I'm talking about, like, the this part-time single parent who's still at home and the kids who they're raising on their own without dad or mom who's deployed. Are those communication issues you're talking about evident with family life, too?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's you know, it's not, there's no easy solution. And part of it is, you know, expectations, especially if it's a soldier's first deployment, you know, and haven't been through that. And if they're young and haven't ever been in that place where, you know, it's okay and you know you have that support, it's very easy to feel abandoned, especially if you're left behind. You have the kids and your spouse is not there. You know, when you're not getting that reinforcement all the time and you expect it, it's a challenge, you know, so. Mm-hmm.
Well, I think this is a good time for us to hear a little bit more about resources that are available for families of service members. For many part-time single parents, there's a predictable schedule or cycle of work weeks and weeks off, but when members of the military are deployed, their spouses may be single parenting for many months. Kids These Days contributor Jessica Cochran has a look at some of the military resources available to help ease the burden for families during deployment.
On Joint Base Elmendorf Richardson, nestled among industrial-looking buildings and aircraft hangars, there is a log cabin. It once housed the Kashin Club, a bar for service members, but these days it's the home of Elmendorf's Military and Family Readiness Center. Right inside the door, a children's play area is gated off. The rest of the building is filled with offices and classrooms. One small room has a video camera on a tripod, pillows, and stuffed animals. Here, parents leaving on deployments can be recorded reading a story. They leave with a DVD their kids can watch anytime they want. Kitty Bodwin says the goal is to keep deployed members connected to their kids and their spouses.
One program is called Operation Sweet Dreams. And mom, dad, or kids can bring in an electronic copy of a special picture, and we actually put it on a pillowcase. We transfer it, and then we can create words on it. And it gives the child something to sleep with that's got the picture of the deployed parent. But I've also had husbands and wives that have no kids do it for each other.
There's some direct help for parents left at home, too. A free oil change at the gas station on base, free evening or weekend childcare once a month during deployments, quarterly social events
that we host to get them out, get them connected with other deployed families so they can talk and share some of those same angst and while doing something fun.
Bodwin lets people know about events in the community also, often using the Key Spouse program. In each unit, certain spouses are trained to act as liaisons with the families in the unit. Over on the Fort Richardson side, units have family readiness groups who play a similar role, getting information out quickly, helping each other to solve problems among themselves, and directing people to more resources when they need them. Rick Caswell is the Mobilization and Deployment Manager for Army Community Services. He says the Army also offers some free childcare and quarterly Hearts Apart social events. And there's Family Resiliency Training, a module-based curriculum designed to help families recognize their strengths. For when any military family needs a little help, there's the Military Family Life Consultant Program.
And those are licensed clinicians that rotate in and out of the installations anywhere from 30, 60, 90 days. And so they don't take any names, they don't write any notes down, they just simply sit down. They're meant for short-term problem solving. And they just sit down and talk folks through a situation so they can help themselves through it.
Caswell's office offers pre-deployment trainings for soldiers and families to help them manage their expectations and improve communications. They also cover financial management, a job some spouses may be taking over for the first time during a deployment.
Anyone in ACS is here to help families or soldiers that just need somewhere to go talk. If it's something that we don't necessarily handle ourselves, we will find a resource that's available for that family. And we just don't give them a phone number and say, hey, have a nice day. We will actually link them up with a resource and provide some follow-up with them so we know that their needs have been met.
The services at J-Bear are available to any active duty military, Coast Guard, and National Guard families who live nearby can participate in most activities. For families who are further away, the Alaska National Guard has 7 family readiness centers around the state, including in Bethel. Jan Myers is the state family program director for the Guard.
You know, at most of the family assistance centers, again, we have local folks from the local area that know, you know, the local resources, because Fort Rich or Elmendorf, the active duty folks, you know, can't reach out and touch Bethel. So, you know, we're there, we know what's available, and we get them the assistance they need, whatever it is.
The Guard also relies on family readiness groups and key volunteers, especially in rural areas. Often when a soldier is deployed, their family will go home to a rural Alaska village and need services or information there.
Having, you know, volunteers that have stepped up and said, you know, I am available, and if one of the families in my village needs assistance, you know, give me a call, and we make sure those families have those names and numbers, and so we just got to make sure our volunteers are trained up to assist till we can get them here, or we send out an expert out to the village. So we have utilized them frequently.
Myers says meeting needs across Alaska is unique and challenging, so her department takes a creative, flexible approach. All 3 agencies share resources, information, and the same goal, keeping families intact, even when they're not together. I'm Jessica Cochran.
I'd like to remind listeners that this is Kids These Days. I'm Shanna Sheehy. I'm speaking with 3 parents who each deal with different part-time single parenting arrangements in their homes. We're hearing from them about ways they adapt to this kind of parenting schedule, and you can chime in too. Write us an email, that's mail@kidsthesedays.org, or visit our website and make comments directly there. And Amanda Rothbarth, I'd like to go to you. We've heard from Scott Frickson, and we also just heard a piece about resources available to military families. You mentioned that before you had children, your husband was in the military and that he was deployed while you were a married
mm-hmm.
couple.
Yep.
I'm wondering, did you ever contemplate what that situation might be like for you once kids were a part of your life?
I did. But of course, we never had children while he was in the military. I, of course, saw it a lot. And I just thought they were the strongest women ever, and I thought I had it pretty easy because I just had my husband gone, but they had a father gone. So,
how did you see, in this case, you're mentioning women, how did you see women coping?
You know, it really varies from every family, and the strength of the couple, I think, really kind of defined how they were going to react to the deployment and to how they were going to react to parenting alone. And, you know, for the most part, you know, there are some really strong women, but some women definitely need a little more support.
Mm-hmm. And Brooke Scalzo, going back to you, you're on the phone with us from Seward, mm-hmm. and your husband is a commercial fisherman. So, you know, Dad, in your case, is working a lot, almost the entire sort of summer and then edges season from May to November. So when it's not the fishing season, what does your husband do? Is he home all the time, or is there another job, or do you go to work?
Well, that's definitely the bonus, is that when he officially ties up the boats for the winter, he is physically home every day, but he's just down the hill at our workshop working on the boats to prepare them for next year. But we get the benefit of, you know, Daddy is 10 feet away to the workshop, so, you know, many visits to him in the workshop during the day, and he's home for dinner every night and comes up and eats lunch with the kids. And so it's definitely a very huge perk.
And would you say, this might be hard because you're kind of speculating, but if you didn't have this family situation where Dad was away for so much of the time out fishing in the summers, do you think that his dad self, like the way that he's a dad when he is home and he's just down the hill in the shop, is he sort of a different dad when he is around than he might be if he had a sort of more 9-to-5, go to an office job, do you think?
I definitely think so. Very much to what Amanda had said about the Disney dad. I think that definitely comes into play during the summertime for sure. You know, wanting to do fun things with the kids. And then you kind of see the role reversal when he's here every night and taking on some of the responsibilities and helping get the kids to bed and everything. And you do a lot of speculation, like, wow, if he had to do that every night, how would that go? But, I definitely think that there are some things, for instance, you know, we have a 2-year-old going through the terrible twos right now. And, you know, sometimes as a mom, you hear it and you just kind of have to tune a little bit of it out, or you just, you know, become immune to a bit of it. Whereas I see that affects Dad a little bit more. He gets stressed out. And I think that's some of the disadvantage, because he doesn't get to get into the everyday and know that, you know, she's going to fuss for a few minutes, but we'll distract her and she'll move on to other things. And I don't think that it would ruffle his feathers as much had he, you know, seen it long term.
Mm-hmm. And for both you, Brooke and Amanda, you're talking about the Disney dad. I think that's a great, really charming description. From the perspective of being that, you know, you're the parent who's home all the time, and when Disney dad appears, and I'm sure he's very exciting to your children and can probably take a lot of license with maybe, you know, bedtimes not being when they would be, or, you know, maybe more sweets, I'm just kind of guessing here, than you might normally give. You know, does that ever challenge you as the all the time, maybe more mundane parent? Do you ever feel any particular way about that scenario? Maybe I'll throw that first to you, Amanda.
Sometimes I do feel like the person who lays down the law, but at the same time, sometimes he comes home and he has certain things that he's really strict on that I'm not when he's gone. So it's a little bit of give and take, I guess, on those things. But yeah, it's like any parent, you know, you kind of each have picked your battles, and it just happens that he picks his battles every 2 weeks and I have to pick them all the time.
How about you, Brooke?
I definitely do feel like I am the heavy in some certain situations, because, you know, when he does sneak home, you know, it's time to have fun, and our schedule is no schedule. But I do think, in alluding to what Scott said with the communication, that really helps deflect some of those things that normally would have got us riled up, you know, like parenting differences. We purchased sat phones for our 2 bigger boats, and, you know, it's an expense that we think is totally worth it, because then, you know, he can call home and say goodnight to the girls every night, and I can tell him about the daily things, and that, you know, one of them is being stubborn about this, so that when he does come home, you know, that we have that communication and it's not reinventing the wheel. It does make things a lot easier. But, yeah, I definitely do feel that I can be the lawmaker.
Do you ever, Brooke, do you ever call him up on that sat phone and say, oh, my gosh, I'm in this situation and I just need some backup that I'm handling it the right way? Does that ever happen?
Yeah, definitely. There's days that I'm sure he wishes he didn't have those sat phones. But definitely times where you just need to vent as a parent. And just, he's definitely received a couple of those calls a time or two.
Yeah, well, Amanda and Brooke, they have an excellent strategy of coping with the separation. And something I try to stress to, you know, deployed soldiers is not only expectations, but what's the end state? What's the goal at the end? Why do you have to do this? Or what's the purpose? And my wife and I, we didn't want to be separated the last 6 months, you know, but we knew for the future and quality of life, that's what we're looking at. You know, we're going to choose to do this and take on this. And someday, you know, when we're successful, we can take months off as a family. I had lots of opportunities to fly after I retire, but all those jobs would take me away from family. And I've been doing that since I've been 17. Unfortunately, some of the soldiers, they don't have that opportunity, and they have a hard time seeing what the end state is because the demands are so great. A good friend of mine that used to work, and now he's an Alaska State Trooper, 4 out of the 5 years that he was in the active Army, he was deployed. 2 Iraq tours, 2 Afghanistans, and he had a young daughter also. And, you know, unfortunately, it was too much. So he loved the military and loved what he did, and he was an outstanding soldier. But he went on and wanted to be an Alaska State Trooper, and now he's successful in that field. So that's a challenge on that end when you can't see. But as Amanda and Brooke said, you know, their families, they know what the purpose is for the separation. That, I think, helps everybody.
And I always like to say, yes, my husband is gone 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off. But he also, I like to look at it and say, he has a job that he has 6 months off. I mean, yeah. What kind of job can you do that has that kind of time off? If he worked a regular town job, as we call it, I don't know what we would do if we only had 2 to 3 weeks a year off. So that's how I like to look at the positive side of the slope schedule.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is Kids These Days, and today I'm talking about part-time single parenting with Scott Frickson, Amanda Rothbarth, and Brooke Scalzo. We'll talk more after the break, and our Juno contributor brings us a story about the part-time single parenting experiences of the seasonal Alaska legislature, and more yummy creative ideas from Chef KTD. This time, it's building care packages for loved ones who are far away. Stay with us. We'll be back after the break.
They toss the dice, it had to be. The only one for me is you, and you for me. So happy together. I can't see me loving nobody but you for all my life. When you're with me, baby, the skies will be blue for all my life. Me and you, and you and me, no matter how they toss the dice, it had to be. The only one for me is you, and you for me, so happy together. Toss the dice, it had to be.
Next time on the program, we're talking about K-12 education and early development in Alaska. The commissioner of the department of the same name joins us, along with an early childhood specialist from the Office of Children's Services. We'll learn more about Best Beginnings and other programs that support our youth and the way they learn. Join me, Shanna Sheehy, for that and more next time. That's Kids These Days on KSKA, Tuesday at 2 and again at 7 p.m. Welcome back. This is Kids These Days. I'm Shanna Sheehy. I'm speaking with Scott Frickson, Brooke Scalzo, and Amanda Rothbarth today. We're discussing what it means to be a part-time single parent and how different families deal with this kind of work-life arrangement. And before we get back to our studio conversation, let's hear from KTD contributor Scott Burton. As we're seeing today, there are many types of jobs in Alaska that take one parent away from home for an extended period of time. Among those jobs that mean parenting from afar are legislative positions in Juneau that see one parent working seasonally in the state's capital. Reporter Scott Burton brings us this dispatch from Juneau.
When I met Representative Bryce Edgman on a Monday morning, a call-in radio show had cut into our time, and we were left with about 15 minutes before his next appointment. He was busy, and I wondered how he squeezed in dad time, too.
Well, there have been times where it's not been easy. There's no question about that.
Especially since his wife and 10-year-old son live almost 1,000 miles away in Dillingham. During his first 2 years as a representative in 2007 and 2008, the session was longer. His family moved to Juneau, and his son helped around the capital.
He went to school in one of the elementary schools here in Juneau and spent a fair amount of time here on the fourth floor where my office is in the Capitol building, and got to know and become a favorite, sort of an office pet of quite a few offices.
But then the session shortened and it made sense for the family to stay in Dillingham. Now, instead of seeing his son daily, he calls him every day without exception.
Just so that he gets to hear from Dad that things are okay has been really important.
And what do you talk to a 10-year-old about?
Well, we talk about his schoolwork. We talk about how things went in school that day. We talk about some of his responsibilities that he has around the house while Dad is gone. If I could offer one bit of advice, it would be simply to call home every night, to make sure you call home every night. That's very important for starters. But then try to keep the subject matter somewhat consistent and try to be patient, because it's hard to talk to, younger kids on the phone. They often want to talk and tell, a 5-minute accounting of what happened at school, if you will.
But he said his situation with an elementary age child is rare. The average age of a legislator is in the upper 50s. Most of the parents in the building have older kids, like staffer Karen Schusler of Eagle River Representative Anna Fairclough's office. With a husband whose job takes him away too, she has been presented with several challenges, especially with 3 teenage boys.
Well, I had already put in place friends of mine, neighbors. If you see too many cars at the house, there's a party. I had a couple of nurses that are already on standby that I'd already given permission to if something happened to one of the kids.
Like Representative Edgman, Schusler was a chronic caller, but now she has another way.
Now they do Facebook and they call me the creeper, because I get on and try to find out what they're doing. So that's okay. I still do it.
Schusler is not the only parent keeping tabs from afar. Sharing stories with coworkers is comforting.
Well, we laugh together about things, and sometimes you think you're the only one going through crises with teenagers, and it's nice to know that someone else, that the same thing's happening, so you're just not the only one. Driving wrecks, girlfriends, heartache.
And you'd think with one or both parents occasionally gone, sometimes their boys would go crazy.
Actually, they miss me. But it was a good bonding time for them. Dad, they had to kind of step up to the plate, learn how to cook, learn how to do some laundry. So it was kind of a good thing. But they appreciated me when I got home.
Her boys are college age now, but she's still taking care of them from afar.
In fact, I have Girl Scout cookies that I'm sending out this week to all the boys. Still doing it.
I'm Scott Burton.
And this is Kids These Days. Brooke Scalzo, on the phone from Seward, I wanted to ask you a question related to some of the stuff we just heard in Scott Burton's story. He mentions that a lot of legislators are in their 50s, so they, most often have kids who are maybe in grade school or high school or middle school. And since you have a 17-year-old living in your household, and your husband is away as a commercial fisherman most of the time from May to November, I'm wondering if there are, are there times when he misses things that are important to Jason, your 17-year-old?
To James? Yeah.
I'm sorry, James.
James just graduated from Alaska Military Youth Academy, and the decision to have Jimmy go there was that happened, you know, a lot of that happened over sat phone calls and things. And it's a lot of times it's difficult because, especially in that situation where it's John's son, I would really like to wait and be on standby until I get an official word from mm-hmm. John. And a lot of times that doesn't happen because, you know, he's busy. He's not sitting on his butt out there. He's working hard, and you don't get an instant call back. And to make those decisions for the teenager a lot of times is really difficult. But it's a matter of taking the reins into your own hands too, and just, you know, do the best decision that you feel that, you know, Dad and I would do for you, and this is where we go.
Mm-hmm. And Amanda Rothbarth, we've mentioned that you have young children, and that in the case of your family life where Dad is away 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off on a slope rotation, you said that your daughters haven't known anything different because he's had that job since they were born.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering, right before the break, you mentioned that there are these, you know, you see a lot of positives to your particular part-time single parent situation, where if you add up all those weeks that he's off half of the year, mm-hmm. Versus the, what did you call it? What was the?
In-town
the town job.
Jobs, right?
I want to know more, you know, tell me more about those positives. What else would you say are uniquenesses about your situation that really work for you that you wouldn't want to give up?
I know my husband wouldn't want to give up all his time to fish and moose hunt and do kind of all those Alaskan things, volunteer for the Iditarod. I know those things are really important to him. And the thing is, when he's home, he's home. He can take the kids to school and pick them up and do kind of some of the stuff that dads that lived in town wouldn't necessarily be able to do. He gets to volunteer for school, and we've made it work for us. But at the same time, you know, I'm pregnant and due any day, literally. And I know it's you know, high potential that he could miss this birth if he doesn't get on a plane, or it happens in the middle of the night. But after talking to other slope wives and thinking about the birth of our other children, we've just decided that having him home postpartum is so much more important than having him sit around and just stare at me pregnant. waiting for it to happen. So,
you know, it sounds like you talked to some other women or other people who might be in the same kind of situation. And are you often often looking for those positives? Like, okay, well, maybe he's not going to be here for the day that baby comes, but then he's going to have 2 weeks where he's not responsible for anything else when right. baby's brand new. And that's really, you just said that it's worthwhile, more worthwhile
postpartum to have him around, because
mm-hmm.
he's extremely helpful. You know, I do have a lot of girlfriends whose husbands work on the slope, and we actually always joke about writing a book and all the funny chapters we could write about all the aspects of family life and living on the slope. But
well, you know, illuminate us without giving away, you know, your number one bestseller. Tell us what might some of those chapters include.
I'm trying to think of one. Relationships. You know, definitely the Disney dad would definitely be a chapter.
Mm-hmm.
Girlfriends are always coming up with ideas. I know. Work hard, play hard is a slope thing. They go to work and all they do is work for a good 12, 16 hours a day. Somebody else changes their beds and makes their meals, and they come home and they're on vacation for 2 weeks, some of them. And so it's kind of hard to get them out of that mentality that life does continue even when you're home. So that's definitely a chapter, work hard, play hard.
Right. Do some slope workers come home and sort of have a hard time transitioning out of, you know, the expansive buffet, choosing anything they want to eat and having their beds made for them every day mode?
It's like the freshman 15 up there, I think, because they do have great food. You know, it's like they can't get outside a lot because it's so darn cold. But my husband swears that he gets so sick of the food up there because it seems like it's the same thing to him every night. So he really doesn't love my cooking and appreciates being home.
Mm-hmm. And Brooke Scalzo, I'm wondering, you know, Amanda's talking a little bit about how she is, I'm sensing has a sort of a support group or other families who are in the same circumstances who she can be close to and talk to, probably in particular when dad's away. Is that something that exists for you with other families who have people working in the commercial fishing industry?
Not as much in the commercial fishing industry. We do have a couple of other families here, but more than anything, we do have several Coast Guard families here that go through a lot of the same experience, and we do have slope families here too. Mm. So yeah, there's definitely people that are in the same or similar boat, and it is nice to commiserate with them every once in a while and to know that you're all together in the same boat.
Scott Frickson, before the break, you mentioned something about how you have a 20-plus long career as a pilot in different ways, and that there are lots of commercial flying opportunities for you after your planned retirement, but that you're not considering those for yourself and for your family. Can you explain to me a little bit about why you're making that choice?
Yeah, I discussed it with my wife, and she was an adjunct professor at UAA writing. And if you didn't know, the adjunct professors do not make that much money. For quality of life, I started my own little small real estate company in Alaska and never owned a new car, never owned actual house, just, you know, places I'd fix up and rent. And my whole goal, my whole life was to be able to get in that point where you could have quality of life. And you got to sacrifice to do that sometimes unless you inherit something, you know. You got to work for it. That's something that I stress to some of the youth. In fact, congratulations, Brooke, to your son, because the Military Youth Academy is an outstanding program. And I teach there, too, and that'll really set your son up for success.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's a great thing. To get to across to kids that, you know, sometimes you have to sacrifice. You can't get it right away if you want it, you know. I use that as an example and actually show this resort. You know, this is where I started. Enlisted at 17, joined the Air Force. Wanted to fly, went through college, you know, became an officer. And so this is like the end goal for our life is running this resort. And I'm going from flying helicopters to cleaning bathrooms. But it may be humbling, but it's a good humbleness because I know at some point my wife and I will be able to take 3-4 months off a year, you know, hire some managers, and we'll have a better quality of life. And I think that's really the ladies on the panel here and their families, they've discussed with their husbands, why do we want to do this? It's for the quality of life that you're going to get in the future. That's important, whether you're in the military or whatever, to know those expectations and communicate why you're doing it, because then you can see the light at the end of the tunnel, and it makes that separation so much easier.
And it sounds like you were a helicopter pilot, is that right? So I do know that there, you know, there are many different part-time single parent type situations that aren't necessarily military or North Slope worker or commercial fisherman. And one that comes to mind is commercial pilot, where if a commercial pilot works for a major airline, oftentimes they're taking trips that can be as few as 3 days or can be as great as 2 weeks away from home, flying around. And there are many, many families that have a parent who's working in the commercial airline industry, and there are many other kinds of situations in Alaska. Mining, for example, is another situation where there might be a part-time single parent scenario. Scott Frickson, let's ask you a little bit more, too, about some of your experiences when you work with deployed soldiers. Do you do much in your position to sort of prepare the soldier who's about to deploy, who does have a family, to try to help them understand some of the challenges that they might be facing before they leave?
Yeah, we work hand-in-hand with the Family Support Group for the Alaska National Guard, and that's an outstanding program that supports families not only, you know, prior, during, and after deployments. And we teach life skills in that and try to stress, you know, to the families that it'll be much easier if you communicate before you go, because you may not have that option when you're deployed. There's just not that many assets, you know, in theater to be able to Skype all the time with your family, you know. So we do, but again, it's a difficult challenge because of the length and because of the mission. Sometimes the soldiers just cannot communicate. I can tell you, from personal experience, it makes people feel a lot better at what they're doing, and the sacrifices when you come home and you have somebody come up to you in uniform and say, hey, thanks for what you're doing. You know, it does make you feel like you've really done something worthwhile and the sacrifice was worth it. Mm-hmm. So I appreciate all those people that, you know, see me in uniform or whatever and, you know, say that it goes a long way.
And you're thinking sacrifice is greater than just that you were there and you were serving. It's also what you're leaving behind.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. So. Amanda Rothbarth, is this situation that you're in where your husband's away half the month and then home half the month, is this, I'm wondering, when you all as a couple, the two of you as a couple, made this choice before kids came into the picture, was it something you debated? Was it something you had to really think about, that this is the kind of family lifestyle that you wanted for yourselves?
We did, but it was also hand in hand in me being a freelancer. So, I mean, essentially, we didn't really want our children in childcare. We wanted them home with us. And so he went to the Slope so that I could quit my full-time job that I had and be home and freelance. So he helps me out on those 2 weeks he's home. He's essentially, you know, my backup childcare. And then it's always kind of this crazy schedule when he's gone, trying to work a little and take care of kids.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was a pretty deliberate choice, I think, that we made.
And is it something that you see going on indefinitely as your kids get older?
I do. I mean, every once in a while, you know, we'll throw around the idea of a town job. But we really have to weigh the positives and negatives. I mean, simple things like commuting. My husband and I are used to commuting. And he gets into, you know, the Anchorage traffic jam, as he calls it, and he can't stand it. And I'm like, well, you know, that would be part of what you'd have to deal with on a daily basis if you, you know, worked in town. So, yeah, those are some things that, you know, we always weigh.
Mm-hmm. And how about you, Brooke Scalzo? I'm not familiar with how your family came into the commercial fishing business. I know sometimes that's something that's a family tradition. Did you and your husband make a conscious choice to have that be your family's lifestyle, which includes these times that your husband's away for stretches?
Yeah, we, you know, when I met John, he was into commercial fishing. He only had one boat at the time, but I knew that was his way of living, and that was the way things were, and I loved it. And we also made that decision when we decided to have children that, like Amanda, we didn't want to have to do childcare at all. And I knew that I would be staying home once we did that. What we didn't anticipate was with each child, we seemed to acquire another boat and get bigger. And then there was this huge need for, with boats come paperwork and dealing with crew and all of these things. And so, you know, it, as our family business grew, it also, you know, there's a job for me there. And I don't know if I'll go back to teaching. I do like that I, you know, am a very large contributor to our family business in keeping things organized and knowing where things are. And we don't have to outsource that. You know, we don't have to pay so much for any kind of bookkeeping. But yeah, it was just a very slow progression as to how it happened. But yeah, we always knew John's always been a fisherman, and that's the way it's going to be.
So you can't imagine your life any other way. It sounds like your family life.
No,
any other way?
Definitely not. No. And you know, there's, I never in a million years, you know, I grew up in Wisconsin, and I never in a million years imagined myself having this much freedom. You know, I expected that I would, you know, like Amanda said, have a town job and, you know, have my 2 to 3 weeks off a year. And now, you know, part of us, you know, part of me staying home with the children and doing the bookkeeping is that, you know, if John calls from the sat phone and says that he's, you know, going to go and fuel up in Whittier, we can drop everything. We load up the truck, we grab him, you know, a bunch of Safeway groceries, and we drive over to Whittier, and we get to spend the afternoon with him, and it makes it totally worth it.
Mm-hmm. Well, Scott Frickson, I think that you might have the final word today about part-time single parenting. A couple different ways that you can comment. Is there anything from your own experience right now, having your wife away as the single parent, or from your work with military families that could kind of round out this conversation?
Well, it's neat to have all the different segments from, you know, Amanda's and Brooke's experiences, because Alaska is unique, and I've flown and been in a lot of places in the world, and people have a hard time imagining the scope of how huge it is and the economic climate up here. A lot of people don't have a choice. I mean, the opportunities are out there, and you can't just drive there. If you were, you know, having a job in Kansas, you could commute, come home, and those opportunities are there. In Alaska, you know, you go up to Kotzebue, that's a whole another world, you know. And so a lot of families up in Alaska, you know, do have to make those sacrifices, but you get the rewards too of living in an amazing state, you know, and having those opportunities to hunt and fish and things that other people can't do. So it's neat, because most of my experience is with the military experience and how people cope and strategies for that. But here in Amanda and Brooke, they've you know, been successful by doing some of those same things, you know, communicating and why are we doing this? What's the prize? You know, we want to have a lifestyle where we can be a stronger family, and sometimes that takes sacrifice.
Well, I'd like to thank each of you for being here today. Brooke Scalzo joined us from Seward on the phone. Thanks so much, Brooke.
Thank you.
And in the studio with me in Anchorage is Amanda Rothbarth and Scott Frickson. Thanks to both of you for being here as well.
Thanks.
Today on Kids These Days, we're bringing you another installment of Chef KTD with Liz Madsen, sous chef at the Crow's Nest. She shows producer Sarah Gonzalez how to make colorful and delicious personalized sugar cookies that are perfect for care packages for faraway mom or dad, or for any special person who could use a sweet pick-me-up. Plus, Chef KTD introduces us to edible markers and spray paints, which makes decorating these cookies extra fun for the kiddos.
Today we're going to make short dough cookies, or sugar cookies, decorated with the royal icing to send to families that are away, and just to let them know you care. They're personalized cookies.
So why are these something that would work well in a care package?
Because the icing dries up really hard, but it still stays super shiny, so it looks really pretty when you get it.
Awesome, so let's get started.
Okay. Sticks of butter, and then I'm going to add 2 cups of granulated sugar, and I'm going to turn that on and cream it. Oh, this is softened butter.
Okay. Your dad was in fishing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Was he gone sometimes?
He was, actually. When I was younger, till I was about 5, he would. We lived in Oregon, and he would fly to Kodiak for the summers to go fishing. So the beginning of, you know, the first 5 years of my life, he was gone a lot. And we would send him radio tapes and things. That's another way to personalize stuff, like, hi, Dad, I miss you. Okay, I'm gonna mix it a little bit more. I have 4 eggs here. And once the last egg is in, I'm gonna scrape it down again, just to get those sides really good.
Now, these kind of look like Christmas cookies, the ones that you cut out, roll, and decorate?
Yep, exactly. That's exactly what they are. And it's fun for kids to do because they can get their hands dirty and, you know, they can really make it their own. A teaspoon of vanilla. And then I'm just going to mix this back again just to make sure all the eggs and the butter and vanilla is all incorporated. All right. Now I'm going to add 5 cups of flour. So then I'm going to add 2 teaspoons of baking soda. And 1 teaspoon of salt. Okay, and then I'm just gonna mix this just till it's combined. Okay. I'm gonna get all the flour off the bottom of the bowl, and that looks good.
That's it. Quick.
Mm-hmm. You wanna chill it for an hour and then just roll it out to about 1/4 inch thickness. And cut them out. They bake at 325, and I put it at 10 minutes. It's usually about 12, but it's, you can't take time off. You can always add more time. So that's why I always underestimate. And so I say 10 minutes to 12, depending on your oven. And you just want a golden brown edge around the outside.
Okay, so the cookies are baked, and now it's on to the fun part, the decorating.
Decorating, yes. This is royal icing, which is powdered sugar, milk, corn syrup, light corn syrup, and almond extract, or you can use vanilla. I'm just gonna drop it in like that, tap it, and pull it out and wipe it off. There's also edible markers, and it's just little markers that the kids can color on. These weren't dry enough to do it quite yet, so.
How fun. Yeah. So this is more than just like baking something. It's also an art project.
Total art, edible art project. And the kids can get their hands dirty, and it's lots of fun. And you can eat the mistakes.
Yeah. So if I see here you have like some nonpareil, is that what these are?
Yeah.
And then some sprinkles and...
There's even spray paint now.
Spray paint.
It's edible spray paint. I mean, they have everything.
That's awesome. So how are you piping on the icing? How could you do that if you maybe don't have like a professional piping kit?
Well, you can take a piece of wax paper or parchment paper, which you can find in the grocery store, and you fold it into a triangle and just wrap it into a little cone. Or you can use just a plastic bag and cut a little hole in the end of it.
So then once these are dry, how would you package them to mail them?
You can package them in bags or, you know, if you want to put like decorative bags or just like a Christmas, you know, tin or... And then line it with a lot of wax paper and parchment paper so they don't get broken in the mail.
And then how long will these keep?
I'd say a week.
What else would be a good idea that you could stick in there that would make it safely and also end up on the other end?
You could do dip pretzels, Chex Mix, you know, any of your favorite things you like to cook together, caramel popcorn.
Well, these are colorful and fun, and I'm sure they're delicious as well, and any parent who is far away from his family would love to receive a box filled with these fun cookies.
Yeah, thank you.
That was Chef KTD Liz Madsen showing our producer, Sarah Gonzalez, how to make the perfect care package cookies. This story, the recipe, and photos are posted right now on our website. Go to kidsthesedays.org to learn all the details and to share your ideas for care package items. That's all the time we have today on Kids These Days. Thanks for being with us and being a part of today's conversation. Have something to say to us or about today's guests? That's easy to do. Go to kidsthesedays.org and log into our site by simply using your Facebook login and password. Then you can comment directly to the items there that you'd like to say something about. It's a great way to continue this conversation all week long. And while you're at Kids These Days, get to know our bloggers who post new material each week through us. Or search our archives to find more subjects that matter to you. It's all there on the interwebs. Again, that's kidsthesedays.org. We're also available through Facebook and Twitter. Next time on the program, we're talking about K-12 education and early development in Alaska. The commissioner of the department of the same name joins us, along with an early childhood specialist from the Office of Children's Services. We'll learn more about programs for the littlest kids as well that hour. Kids These Days had help today from Scott Burton, who reported this hour from Juneau. Jessica Cochran is KTD's regular contributor. Sarah Gonzalez ran the studio controls today. She produces our program each week and keeps everything at kidsthesedays.org fresh and new just for you. I'm Shanna Sheehy. Thanks for spending time with me today, and I'll see you next week.
The ideas, opinions, and commentary you hear on Kids These Days are those of the hosts, guests, and contributors, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of its funders or broadcast partners. The Content Producers Guild is solely responsible for what you hear on the program. Kids These Days is made possible by a generous grant from the Association of Alaska School Boards and its Initiative for Community Engagement. Kids These Days is produced in partnership with KSKA 91.1 FM Anchorage, KRUA, and the UAA Department of Journalism and Public Communications.